baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard Podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
So my flight landed yesterday in Mexico. The family is on vacation. My wife and, a couple of her little siblings and the step parents all took us out to Mexico. I don't know if you guys can see through the
palm trees, nice.
And the ocean, right? And the flight lands, buddy, and I check Twitter right away, and Chris Bassett signs with the Blue Jays, 3 years, $63 million. And I'm like, oh my God, they actually did something of substance. And my wife's like, oh, you're going to podcast, aren't you?
Just a massive eye roll. Amazing.
I feel like the, when you have a dog and you don't walk him properly and he gets all like squirrely, this is like, oh, yeah. She's like, okay, go talk Blue Jays so that you're not super annoying all day long. So
we call it chasing the laser in my house. So go chase the laser, Scott.
Go chase the laser. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz. And let me tell you, we have had more interaction in the last week than, do you think it's safe to say, maybe ever in walk-off history?
Yeah, it's been a busy week. The addition of the Clips channel has really changed things. Yeah.
You had to comb through hundreds.
I'm going to have to change how I do mailbag. I'm going to have to either start waking up earlier or tracking things better throughout the week. But I wake up, I brew a coffee, I go through the mailbag, all the comments, and there's like 700 new comments for me to comb through this morning. So
one thing this Clip channel has showed me is how many different views there are of these moves being made by the Blue Jays. Like, it is just a rainbow of spectrum when it comes to it, like everyone's views. And
it is chaotic. I love the passion, which is always good. So let's start with this one. Black and Blue Jays on Twitter reached out and said, holy crap, boys, Chris Bassett to the Jays. That's no joke. Finally, a real legit move. So how are you feeling about this?
That is such a great way of putting it. It's finally a legit move. This truly does move the needle for the Toronto Blue Jays. They really desperately needed to replace the production that Ross Stripling provided last year in this starting rotation. And I know that we were getting nervous, and not just us, the fan base in general. There hadn't been a lot done, which is funny to think about, because what is it? Like, it's not even December 15th yet. Yeah. Especially if you look back on the last couple of years and how slow the market moved, but things have been moving. So, as fans, we're sitting here watching the rest of these AL East teams add huge free agents, spend big bucks. And it kind of felt like we were getting left in the dust, but man, Chris Bassett is a huge acquisition. If you look at the money too, I don't mind that at all. 3-year term, 34-year-old. But his sinker is probably the best sinker that this Toronto Blue Jays team has had on staff since Marcus Stroman. Yeah. It is hard. It darts away. And if you look at since 2020, best sinker by run value, it's Sandy Alcantara. Number two is Chris Bassett.
Wow.
Another thing that really should play well with this Toronto Blue Jays team is Matt Chapman is a freaking stud at third base. And Chris Bassett induces almost ground balls to the third base side than anyone in baseball. And we're not talking rockets up the third baseline, right? Like Kikuchi would do. We're talking ground balls. And this is something that Matt Chapman excels at. I'm really excited. I think it's a great piece to add to this rotation. I hope that they're not done, but if they add a fifth starter, buddy, like pushing Kikuchi to the bullpen and him being our sixth available starter when, knock on wood, if bad tacos happen to appear for a month or so, I feel so much more comfortable than that, than trying to fill that fifth spot with Kikuchi or Mitch White. And the addition of Chris Bassett puts this team a lot closer to just that.
Yeah, I like it. I like that it's a three-year deal. A lot of the pitchers we've been seeing, there's just been so many massive deals getting handed out. And I think that this is on an AAV, maybe higher than I would have assumed. Chris Bassett, I wouldn't have guessed he was going to be a $20 million guy. But if that's what the market has dictated, so be it. I like 3 years. I think that's great. I
look at this deal too, and I like how the financing fits into this Blue Jays world, right? Like Hyunjin Ryu being off the books. I know that he is still a Toronto Blue Jay going through rehab. However, over 70% of his salary has been recouped through insurance. He's a $20 million a year guy and has been for the last 3 years. This is his final year of the contract. So Bassett really kind of fits in there where Ryu was and doesn't really raise the needle on where this payroll's at because he's basically taking Ryu's spot. And I think it was an excellent deal, especially considering there was so much talk that Bassett was after 5 years. So the fact you were able to get him for three and maybe just go a little higher AAV than was predicted, which has been the market, let's face it. Yeah, everyone kind of predicted Bassett around that $17 to $18 million a year mark. He already turned down the qualifying offer, which is a caveat to remember as Blue Jays fans, is that the Jays do lose their second round pick in 2023, but they needed to fill this hole. And
this isn't a team that needs draft picks right now.
It's not. And I would love to hear, I know this is mailbag, but I would love to hear what everyone thinks about this signing, because when I saw it, truly, it was relief. Like, that's what I felt. I don't know where you were at, Adam, but I was just like, oh, thank God there's going to be another starting pitcher that can carry some weight.
It really stabilizes things. This is...
Yes, great word.
This is not Rodon. This is not DeGrom. This is not Verlander. But this is a rock-solid piece that fewer games started by Kikuchi is a good thing.
This is a solid number three. This is a guy who in almost, obviously there's exceptions like the Mets and the Astros, but in almost any starting rotation would be your third starter. So great acquisition.
Nice thing with the 3 years too, is that does time nicely with Bo and Vladdy's free agency. They are free agents in 3 years. So by the time we are going to have to pay them, this money's off the books. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to start seeing more. I mean, we've already been seeing it with like the Springer deal and everything just seems to kind of line up with that. So I do think that is something that I think Shapiro and Atkins are very aware of. Question though, for me to you, 3 years, was it 63 million?
63 mil, 21 AAV.
Would you rather have Ross Stripling for that?
No.
No? This is an upgrade over Stripling, you think?
I truly do think that in the long run, this is an upgrade.
Because listen, I know there's a lot of Ross Stripling fans out there.
Yeah,
right? Yes.
Of course.
So I know there's going to be, this is the, I mean, even when we signed Kiermaier, there's Raimel Tapia fans who are saying we should have just kept Tapia.
And it's true. I know, like, these guys become a member of the Blue Jays and it's hard not to fall in love with guys. Ross Stripling, especially, I mean, look at his season. He had a career year and saved this organization when Ryu went down. Mm-hmm. Like, think about how screwed, there's no better word, we would have just been straight up screwed if Stripling hadn't been a viable option in that rotation. Like, wow. Yeah,
no, for sure. Okay, so Chris Bassett, upgrade over Ross Stripling then.
I would say so. And listen, Bassett is 34 years old. He also had a career year last year. However, the thing I like about Bassett is you look at his career numbers and they're pretty solid. He's done it for years. Whereas Ross Stripling, this is really the first time we've seen him excel as a starter. Really the first opportunity he's got too. I would love it if the Jays could still bring back Stripling. Mm-hmm. I think that is a... almost impossibility at this point for the amount of money and years that he would garner.
It's just an interesting comparable to last year, letting Robbie Ray walk away after the season he had and then going out and spending very similar money on Kevin Gausman. But
exactly.
I'm happy with Gausman. That feels
me too.
That feels like a good decision. So
We'll move on, but one thing I did wish to touch on quickly with Bassett is that I love how much pressure this takes off Jose Berríos when it comes to a rebound year. Everyone is aware of what's expected of Berríos. Jose himself, right? Like, it's not like Berríos doesn't feel the pressure and understand the money attached to his name and know where he is slotted in by this front office in the rotation, which is a solid number three. So he knows that there's work to be done, but my goodness, not needing to rely on him is going to help him so much, in my opinion. Yeah,
totally. Okay, let's pivot from that then. Next one comes in from Chucharu. Says, I got a thought here. Are you guys happy if they sign Bo and Vladdy and then literally have no money left for the rest of the team? Rogers is not the Mets or the Padres. We know the Dodgers are probably going to give Ohtani 60 mil next year, and they'll be up at 300 million for a payroll. But at 200 million, I feel like Rogers is stretched. I'd rather try and run our team like the Rays, but with a bigger budget. And if we simply don't have money left for the top dogs, so be it. Great episode, by the way.
Number one, love the wording of this question, because obviously Adam and I, that's what we're after, is for the Blue Jays to handcuff themselves with mega deals to Bo and Vlad where they don't improve the team at any way.
I don't want to be wearing my Vladdy jersey to a Jays game cheering for Aurelvis Martinez.
The truth is, I think that the Blue Jays really land somewhere in the middle of this comment where they do have the funds. They do have the money to go out and lock in Vladimir Guerrero Jr., a homegrown talent, Canadian roots, loves the country, has been very vocal about not liking the Yankees. How do Jays fans not fall in love with that, right? He's good for baseball. He's good for Toronto. I think that there is so much more value to Vladdy than just the money attached to his name and the production he provides. I do think there's going to be a deal that gets done eventually. I sure freaking hope so. And I think if there is a deal that gets done, this front office is smart enough, freaking again, sure hope so, cross our fingers. They have made us doubt in the past. But, you know, I truly do believe that if they go big on Vladdy, it's not going to be something where it's just Vladdy and the rest of the team, and now we're a fourth place AL East team for the until the end of that contract, but we got Vladdy. I don't see that as success. I don't know how this organization would see that as success. But if those are the options, if the options are sign Bo and Vlad and just lose or try and find creative ways to win, then yeah, of course. I think both of us, Adam, can say that's the way we want to go. I just want a World Series, guys. I was freaking 10 last time it happened, and Adam was a baby.
Yes, that is certainly true. All right. One last, I guess, comment that kind of ties into this that we'll get to. So from Scott Carter says, sure, they have the money. Rogers is considered the second richest owner in baseball, but that, of course, does not mean they will spend it. And it's just worth pointing out and reminding everybody that, yes, we do have the money, but there is a difference between a corporation owning a baseball team versus Elon Musk owning a baseball team, right? Where egos...
A billionaire with an ego. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, right? So we can't necessarily just put ourselves in a direct shadow of the Mets and go, well, why aren't we doing this too?
And I know we even have a question about the Mets and how much they're spending, which we'll get to. So we won't get too far ahead of ourselves here. But absolutely, the Blue Jays are not the Mets, despite the fact that when you rank these teams by who has technically the most money, the Blue Jays come up second, just behind Steve Cohen. But again, huge difference between Rogers appealing to their shareholders and Steve Cohen appealing to his massive giant ego and dislike of the New York Yankees and his feelings of the Mets should be the premier team in New York. Like, a lot that goes into that, that the Jays, you know, the dichotomy of what's going on with Rogers has nothing to do with, you know?
Absolutely. Okay, I'll just touch on this quickly and get this out of the way. Some housekeeping before we move on to more baseball talk. We did get some comments last week about the clips going out before the full episode went out on the main channel. Some frustration, which was understandable. I didn't think there would be a problem with switching it, so we started putting out the full episode again on the main channel first and then the clips after the fact. But unfortunately, because we do have an overlap in our audience, the way the algorithm works with YouTube is if it pushes out clips, it pushes them out to our subscribers first. So if all of our subscribers have already seen those clips in the full episode, you guys aren't watching the clips, which is understandable and fine. Everybody yeah. consumes their content differently, but YouTube, the brain of YouTube doesn't appreciate that. All it knows is it pushed these clips out to 500 people. Nobody watched it. So it interprets that as, oh, if even the subscribers aren't watching these clips must be garbage. Let's not show it to the general public. So it just kills our algorithm.
By the way, too, I do want to express our appreciation for all of you out there who enjoy watching this as one long episode, because we're releasing these 45 to 60 minute episodes. And the fact that we have garnered, for lack of a better word, kind of like listeners and community and fans that want to see the whole thing, like it means the world. But like Adam said, right? It's so beneficial for us.
Unfortunately,
to do the clips first.
Unfortunately, we're in 4 years of doing. Like January will be our fourth calendar year of doing the walk-off. Believe it or not, and we're at a point where growth and sustainability is the name of the game. We need to get this to a spot where it is profitable. It is certainly not. I'm working this as a full-time job. Scott is working this as a full-time job. My wife is on me to grow our family and have more babies, and I can't do that while we are making the chicken scraps that we are making right now. We need to grow. The Clips channel right now is our best way of doing that. And just here's some boring YouTube stats for anybody that's curious. Two full years on YouTube. We have about 500,000 views on our main channel. Our Clips channel has existed for about 5 weeks.
Which is incredible. And thank you so much.
We're already pushing. We might be at 600 subscribers by tomorrow, but we have already hit 100,000 views in 5 weeks. So it's like night and day that is the way we need to prioritize for the time being.
And if it's annoying to you, apologies, but we appreciate you sticking with us and understanding, or at least we hope you
understand. Alternative is that we close up shop and the walk-off dies, and then you're not getting any free content ever. Well, not from us. Yeah. There's a lot of great other great channels out there, and we're aware of that. But anyways, that's something we need to do, so we appreciate the growing pains and you guys suffering through it with us.
We are working to give options to fix this. I know that our Patreon, and believe me, we cannot, there's about 20 rabid Patreon that just literally are paying us $4 a month, and they're just doing it to help us grow the channel, basically, because we're not providing maybe the value that we should be. This is something we're addressing come the new year. So all of you in Patreon, believe me, we're going to look after you, and we are going to give everyone else more of a reason to maybe join that, which would include access to the full episode right out of the gate. Yeah. And if you don't want to pay that $4 a month, that's great. We're still going to allow you to watch the full episode for free. You just need to wait 3 hours and deal with the clips being released first.
There you go. Well put. All right, let's move on from there then. Okay, next comment comes in from the Patreon, actually. So Matt Finley says, "Hey, gents, in a perfect world, what moves that haven't happened yet would you like to be talking about come the new year?"
Oh, boy. I love this question because there's so many different options out there for where this organization could go from here. Filling that upper end rotation need is, again, such a relief. I would love to see a fifth starter added. someone who's maybe a little bit more of a roll of the dice, but it can at least compete with Kikuchi and White for that final spot, add a little bit of depth to the rotation. I would love one big bad bullpen arm. And when I say that, I mean a guy who can get in there and hammer away at 101. I love the way this bullpen is set up. However, I do think there is a, maybe not a need, but it would be a nicety to have that power arm back there. And who knows? We've talked about this, Adam, right? There's actually, for the first time in a couple of years, some truly internal options that could come to the forefront. Nate Pearson's healthy. He's been looking good. And in the Dominican League, I know that Big Nate is like Bigfoot, right? It's just, it does he exist? Have we ever really seen him? But he is a really strong option. And I know we've had guys on the podcast here. Troy Watson is a dude who hit 103 off of Tommy John surgery, is healthy and pitching for the first time in two full years, right? Because he had to sit through the COVID season and then literally two innings into 2021 had Tommy John surgery. Any guy who throws 103 is going to turn some heads and be given some opportunities. Friend of the show, Hagen Dan, or Haggy D, who's going to make his return to the show, by the way, hopefully in the new year. But he's another guy who has finally gotten healthy, is progressing, and throws triple digits, right? Love to see it. Zulueta, Yasser Zulueta, who Zach Britton came on this podcast, who's one of the top catching prospects in the system currently, not already rostered on the Jays. But he brought up the guys that really impressed him that he was catching. And he was like, Zulu's number one. Like, he is just unreal. Zulueta out of Cuba. He's been injured for the last couple of years and is another guy who, yeah, 24 years old. And now we're seeing him ranked, I think, number three on this prospect Blue Jays list. But he could have been there years ago, just couldn't stay on the field. So there are internal options here, but I really would love to see them go out and maybe this is a trade deadline type of acquisition when you're talking back into the bullpen. And then, of course, Adam, we already talk lefty bats all the time, whether people want to hear it or not. And I think somebody like Michael Brantley or Michael Conforto is still a thing that will happen. I don't know who they're going to go, but I think another left-handed bat is in the works. Is there anything that you were after? Like, that you're just like, oh man, you know what would be a nice little addition here?
Well, looking at the free agent market for relief pitchers, there's nothing out there right now that really screams
prioritize this. Yeah.
Plus, relief pitchers are always just a bit of a crapshoot. So, I don't know. The Bassett thing really does take the pressure off the starting rotation. Look, I know I'm going to get roasted in the comments for being a Rogers secret employee trying to calm the fan base down here. But like, literally, if we don't make another move this offseason, am I going to be disappointed? Yeah.
Yes.
Is this enough for me to not panic? Yeah, but barely.
Yeah.
Kevin Kiermaier, I like it, but I do want another piece. And I think where I'm at right now is that the rotation, I'm satiated. We've got four that I trust.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Maybe Zulueta makes a push for that starting spot. Who knows?
Who knows? That's a great point.
Like, you just list, I'm not going to get into it again, but you just listed a bunch of the names that we got. Most of those are relief guys, but you never know who's going to, whatever. Maybe Nate is healthy, doesn't have motto, isn't sharing water bottles with guys this year. Maybe he's good to go. Who knows?
Yeah.
Even if it's Kikuchi. If it's Kikuchi and he's just our number five. No, I hate where I'm going with that sentence. Forget it. Strike it from the record. No, he can be our number six. He can be our spot start guy.
Our worst case scenario.
Swingman, yeah. Kind of thing. So forget that. But I am at a point right now where I don't want to say lefty bat as a priority, but
I would like
to see another high-end outfielder added, even if that's via trade. So for me, my Christmas wish list is bring me Brian Reynolds.
Yeah. Love it.
I mean, I can see the commercials with Ryan Reynolds on Sportsnet already, like the awkward confusion and who's asking for whose autograph here, right?
Yeah,
like it's
yeah.
just, they write these, the commercials write themselves. So bring Brian Reynolds, you know, Deadpool to Canada. All right. Yeah, that's my wish list, I guess, more than anything is let's solidify the outfield.
I like that, man.
All right, next one comes in from Twitter. So Darian416 DM'd us and said, with Sean Murphy now to the Braves, Contreras and Vasquez now off the table, the Jays' trade value for one of their catchers has gone way up. Maybe Cleveland still needs one. I mean, technically, the Guardians have zero outfielders that the Jays would want to ask for, so the only option they got is starting pitchers. So we do have an, I know I'm not going to roast someone for a tweet that's now outdated because
the news and this is the thing we got this message from Darian yesterday. Of course, just this morning, the news broke from Ken Rosenthal that the Guardians signed Mike Zunino. So their catching needs are no longer at the forefront. I'm not saying that Cleveland might not still be in on a guy like Gabriel Moreno, but it definitely is, it would be surprising. But after watching Atlanta go out and get Murphy, nothing would surprise me anymore, right? Like, I really didn't have the Braves pegged as a team that needed a starting catcher. And the fact that they went in there and did it anyways and improved their roster is very impressive. This is what Anthopoulos has always been known for, right? Finding ways to improve, even if it's not where you'd think it would be. But it does. The fact that Darian pointed out that the catchers have gained value still holds water. It's still the truth. There aren't a lot of other options. The Blue Jays are holding almost all the catching cards. So where do you go from here, right? The Cubs could still probably use a catcher. Arizona might be an option for something there where we can flip an outfielder for a catcher.
So let me step in here, Scott, because I did a short video just on that Sean Murphy trade yesterday. And I come across this Ben Nicholson Smith article. This is from November 9th on Sportsnet, but he went down a list of trade partners for the Blue Jays. Okay. So he did a list, basically unlikely pairings, teams that work, but maybe in one direction, right? Where they need a catcher, but they don't really have anything that they can offer us.
Right.
But the fit that works maybe in both directions. So here's the teams he's got listed. The Minnesota Twins, the Padres.
Who just signed Christian Vasquez last night. So right. Take the Twins off.
The Padres, the Guardians, that's still an option. The yep. Pirates, the Brewers, the Cardinals. So Cardinals off the list. Who'd the Cardinals get?
Wilson
Contreras. Thank you. So Brewers still on the list, Pirates still on the list, Guardians now off the list, Padres still on the list.
And you know what? This is where Gabriel Moreno still does hold some real value to maybe some of these teams where you're like, is catching really a fit? He's young. He's super controllable. 6 years of control for that matter. And on top of it, can play a little bit of the outfield, has gotten some reps at third base. I'm not saying that this is necessarily the trajectory for him. I think that in the Blue Jays, they want him to be a catcher, but who knows? There may be other organizations that view him as a Dalton Varsho type that, you know, the majority of his time is going to be a DH in the outfield, but can still get in there as a third catcher and catch 30 games a year. You know, there's some real value in that. So maybe a guy like, I can't see Kirk or Jansen being moved to a team that doesn't need a catcher, whereas I can see Moreno filling a need where maybe you wouldn't see it, obviously, from the outside, right? Like, there may be internal discussions within these organizations where they're like, Moreno's still the guy. He still holds good value. We'll move needs of the Blue Jays. Maybe we'll move a low-end starting pitcher. And, you know, the dream, like you said, is Reynolds. Brian Reynolds, I would move Moreno for Brian Reynolds. Switch hitter, plays center field, plays the outfield spots. you know, right and left. Yeah.
All right, there you go. That's it for the catcher news. Okay, next one comes in from Discord. So Rinks tagged us in a message and said, here's a question for the mailbag.
I love this question, by the way.
What are your thoughts on the Mets this offseason? Is this a good or a bad thing for baseball? When you have an owner that doesn't seem to care one bit about the luxury tax, are we getting away from teams being able to actually compete in this landscape? Obviously, games aren't won on paper or based on the size of your payroll, but it certainly helps. I'll let you guys elaborate. Thanks.
So I will let you pull up, and I know we don't have screen sharing here going on, but I'll let you pull up that Joel Sherman Twitter tweet, Joel, and just kind of read over it here because it's pretty telling.
Joel Sherman tweets out, Mets currently at about $340 million for 18 signed players for tax purposes, which includes Robinson Cano. Will owe about $27 million for six ARB cases, and each team charged about $18.2 million for benefits / ARB pool. They must complete a 26-man roster. That is $345 million or so. The tax on that, we're not talking about like federal tax or anything. We're just talking the luxury tax penalty.
The CBT.
$76.2 million. So that would be what, 345 plus 76?
Yeah.
That would be the total that they are paying.
Over, so that's over 400
million.
Million. We've never seen this spending in baseball. Think about that. 400 million. Think about that $76 million number for the CBT. This is, they're paying more tax than the Pirates are paying in salary.
So yeah, Joel Sherman adds part two to this tweet. Says total for 2023 payroll, 42. Sorry, I'm not even used to seeing numbers this big. $421 million. The tax alone is going to be higher than some teams' payrolls.
I saw a comment in Discord from our good buddy Mustard Tiger that will fit in really well here and really adds to what we're talking about. So he says, I also think there's another side to this question that we won't know for 5+ years. Is this type of free agency frenzy by the Mets going to lead them to just being a roster full of 35 to 40 year olds making 25 to 35 AAV per year? Or are they going to double down and DFA bad contracts and just keep signing folks? If they are weighed down at some point in any way, I think while this is still bad for baseball, it at least feels finite. Great. Great point here.
Sure.
And then he goes, but if they're doing this every year forever, that's pretty hard to swallow. We're in professional soccer territory at that point.
Good points. Where do you,
I guess, fall the question is here, thing? I guess the question is here, is this bottomless pockets? Because the only way that this is truly unfair to the rest of the organizations out there, if the Mets can just literally double the Yankees spending. You know, like they're literally at the point, like $421 million spent in 2023. That's, the Jays are at $200 million and are seventh in all of baseball. Like the Jays spend, I know people are going to hate hearing this and probably roast me in the comments for it, but they are still, you know, like they're at a top one third of.
You're a Rogers team. Plant, Scott.
I'm
cut
a,
it
I'm
out.
A Roger frickin' spy. Look at me go.
Okay. So, my question out of this that I'm focusing on here, is this good or bad for baseball? And for me, it's fine. It's not, I guess I would say it's good for baseball just in that owners are spending money. The business is growing. So that's the silver lining here. If baseball was dying, no one was watching, it wouldn't be an appealing venture for an owner to come in and go, I want a team in baseball because, right? Like I'd rather a rich millionaire spend that money in baseball than in basketball. Or anyways, that's kind of besides the point that I want to get at. I think a bigger problem with the whole luxury tax system is that there's no floor.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that.
So much more worse for baseball.
Yeah.
That a team can spend $12 million on 26 players and get
And this is where I think you need a reasonable floor. Like, make it $75 million. There's no reason if you're a major league organization and you can't afford to spend $75 million in today's baseball, you don't deserve a team. I'm sorry. Okay. Like, I legitimately feel that way. Like,
okay, I hear you, but also, what is the consequence for that? Because rules without consequences don't mean anything anyways. So are we going to just get in a situation where we're like folding teams? Because I don't think that's good for baseball either.
No, that's terrible like Oakland, for baseball, of course.
I don't know the owner's name in Oakland, but you don't deserve a team. Oakland doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And now we're just hoping someone else steps up for an expansion, replace. Like, I don't want to... I don't like that idea.
This is a tough, there should be something. This is a legit quagmire, right? Like, it's like, what do you do? How do you prevent this from happening? How do you, without being too heavy-handed, convince these lesser spending teams to spend a little more and be competitive? Like, how do you prevent the Pirates from happening perennially, right? Like, how do you prevent the Cincinnati Reds constantly selling? Like, you can't have these teams constantly rebuilding.
Well, and like, part of the revenue sharing needs to be redirected towards payroll, I think, because we've had David Sampson on the show before. Mm-hmm. We should talk to him and get him back this spring. But he's former, I guess, vice president technically of the Marlins, was with the Expos. So he knows all the ins and outs of this, and being a revenue sharing team and a bottom of the cap spender and everything like that. And he knows all the loopholes and everything like this. Really smart guy, bit of an asshole, probably rubs a lot of people the wrong way. That's why I love him.
Yeah.
But like, he's honest. He's like, look, when your team gets 50 million in revenue sharing from the Yankees and the Mets and whoever, he's like, you are obligated to spend it on the team. Like, you can't just profit it and give it out as Christmas bonuses to the board. He's like, but he's like, you're not obligated to spend it on payroll. So we don't, we spend it on facility upgrades. You know, we spend it on, you know, like other things that actually increase the value of the business, right? Because like, real estate is always worth stuff, you know, physical like assets are worth stuff. Whereas giving away $15 million to a pitcher when we're probably not going to win this year anyways, doesn't add value to the business of the Miami Marlins or whatever, right? Whereas spending $50 million on upgrades to the facilities and the stadium and whatever, it's like, that's an asset, right? Even to go buy another jet, go, you know, all these things, right? Those are assets that stick with and the value is sustained. So that's a problem I think that needs to be addressed, is that sort of
couldn't stuff. Agree more. Couldn't agree more.
That was probably a really boring clip.
Hey, I think you really are onto something here, man. Luxury tax should need to be funneled back into the team budget. Should be back into salary. It's the only way to continue to force these teams to be competitive and not just lose, because it's more, as soon as it becomes more profitable to lose, you've got a real problem with the league.
I have this thought just kind of popped into my head. I'm sure there's problems with it as well, but maybe there's some sort of a thing where, you know, we talked about a salary floor. Maybe there is a floor where there's no penalty of like, you don't get to have a franchise, we're folding you, you don't exist anymore. But maybe there is a, like, you have to spend at least $40 million on payroll in order to qualify for revenue sharing.
Interesting. I like that.
You want your
incentivize it.
You want your big bucks from the Yankees and the Dodgers, who have these big TV deals that you think that by sending Miami Marlins to New York to play 13 times a year, you think you're contributing to their profits? Well, not if you're only sending a $12 million payroll up there, you're not. So, I don't know. Anyways, let's move on from there, shall we?
Yes, sir.
Okay, next one comes in from Marcus G. Says for the mailbag, Shatkins, this one's funny. Shatkins is that owner in your fantasy baseball, football, hockey auction who just stubbornly sticks to their pre-draft evaluations and don't adapt when the actual market starts overpaying for the elite guys. Sure, you win the moral victory standing your ground on valuations, but you're stuck at the end of the draft with extra money and no players. You end up paying $3 to $5 on $1 guys, i.e. overpaying for mediocrity and uncertainty. And I love the analogy. It made me laugh. I'm a big fantasy football guy. Just snuck into the playoffs this year, by the way. I don't know how I did it. I finished 6-8, so 2 games below 500, but my division was garbage, and I snuck in. So here we go. Anyways, love the analogy. Totally disagree with it, but I still love it. How do you feel, Scott?
I kind of disagree with it, too. I get the sentiment, though, especially, like, I know this comment was before the Chris Bassett signing. You know, like, I was feeling it, man. Like, I was feeling it. I was starting to be like, maybe they're not going to do something. And if that's the case, then what are we doing? But now you see Chris Bassett land, you know, you see the roadmap that could lead to where this team should be, a more balanced lineup, you know, holes in this team addressed from the offset of the offseason, right? You know, so I would love to see another big addition and blow this right out of the water, you know, that this opinion, but it's still there, and there's still a large portion of the fan base that feels this way.
All right. So my problem with this analogy is that in your baseball fantasy auction or your football fantasy auction, the dollars are hypothetical dollars, for one, right? Secondly, everyone has the exact same budget. You got $100 to spend. So sure, like, having a moral victory, whatever, that's funny. Let's throw that aside. There is a difference if you were in a fantasy league where you're spending real dollars. Everyone's putting in $100, and some guys don't have $100 to spend. They have $80 to spend, and some guys have $150 to spend. That's the comparison here, like, to make this, I guess, more realistic. For me, what Shatkins is in a position of right now is kind of like, we had a pre-draft evaluation, and now, again, sorry for the baseball fans, I'm going to talk football here, but it's like, you go into your draft and you're like, okay, there is X amount of good quarterbacks. I'm going to wait until round 7 for my quarterback. There's no rush to get one. But then in round 3, you see a big run on quarterbacks ahead of you, and you're like, oh my God, all the good quarterbacks are going. I better grab one now. And now you've just reached for a quarterback who's still like the 8th best quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're going to get that top guy, there's no point. Just wait till the 8th round now and get the 9th best quarterback rather than the 7th best quarterback in round 3. Stupid analogy.
No.
This comment made a question.
I get what you're saying.
I probably shouldn't even have included it in the mailbag. It made me laugh and smile.
No, so. I love it. It's a great analogy. And Marcus G is a longtime listener.
Longtime listener.
And longtime member of the community. So,
all right. Next one comes in from Gordon Shumway, formerly just Shumway. So he says, this is a comment on our episode with Joel from last week. So,
oh, nice. Okay. Yeah.
Shumway says, love it how this one got more controversial. Good job, Adam and Joel. Best co-host and guest in the biz. He also says, Scott, stop trying to endorse both sides, you fence sitter. In other words, stop being Switzerland, Scott. And me being from Switzerland, that's saying something. So love you guys. So love you too, Gordon. What else?
I love riding the fence, buddy. I can't help it. I ride that fence.
I usually am a fence rider too. I guess I push back maybe a little bit more than you do. I guess my takeaway from this is just another call for comments here. If you guys enjoyed that kind of content where we do have more combative takes on the show, guys like Joel, guys like Craig Ballard.
Absolutely. Because Adam, you and I, we agree on a lot of things. And listen, Adam and I have had arguments and pushback on each other too. But it just seems like more often than not, we kind of agree with the direction that we're pushing, right? So a guy like Joel, a guy like Craig, they always tend to be, they're both incredible baseball minds, but they tend to view things a little differently. And so, yeah, if you want more of that, we'll gladly have those boys on more often type of things. So let us know.
There you go. All right, next one ties into that. So from Scott McCutcheon, when we were talking with Joel about the baseball scandal, the Goldilocks balls, right? So Scott says, sort of to what Adam was saying regarding the ball tampering, my stance for anybody that didn't catch that clip was that this is probably just incompetence-based, not malicious-based. Hanlon's razor, for anyone that's familiar with that. Anyways, Scott says, it looks really fishy, but I think it could just be explained by balls that have specific markings on them, like for special events, by definition, come from the newest batch. Right? Why would you make an Aaron Judge breaks the record for home runs ball in 2021? Right? Like, of course you're not. And therefore, if these are the new Goldilocks balls that the MLB has possibly settled on, then all the rest of the balls are the older stock that's just being worked through. So he says he's more skeptical and pessimistic than that, to be honest. And it doesn't help that they seem to just want to even deny any minor provable aspects of the issue, but it could just be something like that. So I thought that was a really great point.
Yeah, love it.
All right. And then lastly, we'll end on this. Scott Carter says, it's a fun one, especially with you on vacation, says hashtag mailbag. Scott and Adam, what is your drinks of choice? And I'm asking this as I watch this on some stiff rum and Cokes. My guess is that Scott is a vodka guy and Adam goes for pretentious scotch. So Scott, what are you drinking, buddy? I know you're on holidays right now. You gotta have a cold one right next to you. Is it a little coconut with an umbrella?
I've always been a beer guy. I know it's not fancy or if I'm choosing, I always grab a beer. I don't mind a pretentious scotch also, but rarely.
I usually get accused of being a whiskey drinker. I don't know if it's my beard or my build, but I always look like a whiskey guy. Just Jack Daniels straight out of the bottle. To be honest, I'm not a very big drinker. Scott, you could testify. I think you saw me drunk in Fort McMurray for a show one time.
That was it.
And otherwise I think maybe because I have put on some weight in my later years, it is more expensive for me to get drunk. Maybe that's the issue.
Right.
I find myself as a designated driver quite often for my wife. And I say this as someone drinking Bailey's out of his coffee this morning, but it's been a long week. So we can leave it as that. That's my go-to right now is I don't really drink very often at all. And right now it's just Bailey's in my coffee. So there you go.
There you go.
All right. Mailbag in the books.
Thank you so much to everyone who put a comment down this week. Again, apologies if we didn't get to yours. We had hundreds over this week. So the interaction has really picked up and we really appreciate how quickly and how much this walk-off community has grown. So a big thank you to all of you who have hit the like button, hit subscribe, are listening on audio and have gone out of your way to hit subscribe there. So it's truly all appreciated. Of course, there's a link for free for the Discord in the show notes. everybody is welcome there, and it's always talking baseball and Blue Jays. So if you want to get in on the conversation, that's how you do it. We will see you all on Friday. I know Adam is going to be doing some solo stuff until then, but yeah, take care, everybody. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Osborne with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.